welcome to today's podcast on principles of keywords and optimization, brought to you by ACT Training. My name's Sam Holland. I'm the curriculum developer for all of the marketing and digital marketing courses brought to you by ACT. And today we are going to be looking at Unit 302 of the Social Media for Business qualification, which is entitled Principles of Keywords and Optimization. So by this point, you should have recently attended the workshop session. So hopefully you found that useful. Today's podcast is going to be running through a refresher of what was contained in that workshop. So the idea is that you can use this podcast now to recap on the things that you went through in the workshop and hopefully prepare you to walk into that assignment with a bit of confidence, knowing that you know what you need to know in order to pass. So without further ado, let's get into it. So first things first, what are we going to be covering? By the end of this podcast, you should have a good understanding of SEO, of search engine optimization, how to plan the implementation of SEO techniques. We'll also look at social media optimization, how to plan implementation of a website optimized for mobile devices, and ultimately how to complete the assignment for Unit 302. So obviously what's in it for you, knowing about SEO and how to utilize it for your business is a very important thing, especially for someone walking into a digital marketing role. You will learn how to increase traffic to your website using search engines and how to obtain a wider variety of skills for your own continuing professional development. Having a good understanding of SEO is a sort of minimum requirement for someone walking into digital marketing roles. So this potentially could put you in line for potential promotions and stuff as well. So to kick things off then, what is search engine optimization? One explanation of it could be it's the process of optimizing your website to ensure it appears highly in relevant search results. So it's the process of aligning the content of your website or blog or forum or display ad or social media post, whatever you like, to what your potential customers are actively seeking and displaying it in a way that is equally reachable to people and to search engines. So in other words, it's making it as easy as possible for potential customers to find you when searching the internet. So why is SEO important? There was a nice statistic in the workshop there, 93% of your customers won't go further than the first page of Google. That's a huge amount, and for me, I'm absolutely within that 93%. If you're not on the first page of Google, I'm not scrolling through until I find you. Most people do not click past the first page of results, and most clicks are actually at the top three results. So you can see why SEO is important then. Optimized websites have a much better chance of appearing on page one. The higher the search engine ranking, the easier potential customers can find you. And it follows then that the more likely they are to purchase from you. So in the broadest possible terms, the goal of all social media or digital marketing is to create conversions. You want people to click through to your website and make a purchase or give you their data or interact with your service or whatever it is. So making your website functional and easy to navigate gives the user a better experience. And it also makes search engines more likely to display you to their users. We went through a couple of lovely statistics here. 81% of people perform an online search before buying a product. Again, that rings true for me. I'll always Google something. If I'm going to go and spend money on something, then I'll always try and Google it, or the organization that's selling it or providing the service. I'll always do a Google search before I spend my money generally. In 2017, Google accounted for over 79% of all global desktop search traffic, which again, that's a huge, huge number. Another lovely statistic here, 82% of marketers see SEO as becoming more effective. 72% of consumers who did a local search then subsequently visited a store within 5 miles. Now, this next one's an estimate, but in 2020, the average firm is expected to allocate 45% of their marketing budget to digital. Again, for yourselves who are working in digital marketing, these statistics may not be a massive surprise to you, but they are interesting, and particularly when you're looking at justifying your activities to stakeholders or management. So starting with the basics then, what do search engines do? In the simplest possible terms here, a user searches for something on Google, let's say using the search term. Google then searches the internet for keywords that appear in the websites. Google's secret algorithm then decides which results are going to be most useful to the user, and the end result should be the most relevant websites for that user's search term. Now, there are obviously ways of manipulating your website so that you appear highly, and that is the process of choosing your keywords and embedding them appropriately around your website. That is the main focus of search engine optimization, is choosing the correct keywords, putting them in the appropriate places on the website, and then link building. Link building is something that we'll look at in a lot more depth as we go on. Now, as far as search results go, there's two types of search results that you'll see when you type into Google or Bing or whatever search engine that you'll decide to use. We've got organic results and we've got paid results. Now, organic results are free. Now, free, we'll put that in inverted commas, because obviously it does take time, it does take work, it does take resources to appear highly and to consistently appear highly in organic search results. But technically, organic search results are free. Now, they're also by the users deemed impartial, so people who are searching will tend to skip past the paid results and look for the organic search results because they're deemed to be impartial, so they're deemed to be more relevant, more reliable. And it follows then that users are more likely to click. Users are much more likely to click an organic search result than they are a paid search result. Organic search results are generally as a result of relevance to search terms, coupled with good search engine optimization. So Google will always look for the most relevant keywords to the search, but they'll also look at quality of the website, they'll look at placement of keywords around the website in order to for Google to know that you're playing their game. You are playing their game and you are putting the correct information in the correct places in order to show Google, we want to appear highly on these search results. So on the other side of the coin then, we've got paid search results. Now, paid search results can be seen as a cost-effective and efficient way of increasing traffic. Paying to appear at the top of page one will give you more likelihood that you're going to appear highly at search results. So it's more likely to increase traffic than appearing on page three, where 93% of users aren't going to look. It's still at the top of page one, so it's a cost-effective and efficient way of increasing traffic. It's obviously ideal to appear at the top of page one, and successful paid search results will allow you to do that. So more users see the advert, and as a result, they're more likely to click through. Appearing at the top of page one organically can be very difficult to achieve. So it's a nice sort of shortcut to get you to where you need to be. So when we're paying for our adverts to appear at the top of Google or in relevant places using Google, we've got two potential different methods that we can use. And these are pay-per-click and pay-per-impression. And there's positives and negatives to both here. So with pay-per-click, pay-per-click means that you are charged when somebody clicks your advert. So it's useful to drive sales as users are encouraged to click through with calls to action. You can also get a lot of good analytics from this, so you can understand whether or not your calls to action are working. It's an interesting way of gaining some really good information about traffic to your website. On the other hand, pay-per-impression is useful to build brand awareness. It's often cheaper than pay-per-click to reach more people. So there's pros and cons there that you can see. Pay-per-click can become really expensive if you're popular. It's very useful to drive sales, but when it's starting to work and more people are clicking, then it can sometimes get out of control and mean that you're not making the most of it. This might be a reason to switch your advert to pay-per-impression. So a user who knows that their call to action is effective through proven results might try switching the ad to pay-per-impression because they know that that call to action is working. So they just need people to see it at this point. They don't want to be charged every time they click. Just being able to see it with all the analytics that you've got on how that advert is performed with pay-per-click means that you can understand a lot more about it and probably save some money. Pay-per-impression, on the other hand, can be more difficult to analyze for success as the users are not engaging with the link, it's harder to prove how effective it is. So moving on, we need to look at SEO in terms of creating our search engine optimization plan. And there's a number of factors that we need to consider when we're creating our SEO plan. First things first, as it goes with any marketing planning at all, we need to make sure that we understand our goals. We need to create smart targets. So at this point, you need to be doing your research, you need to know your obstacles, and you need to be able to plan on how to overcome them. So some factors for consideration include things like keyword research, the search engines, which search engines are you going to target, content, what sort of content you're putting out, the website itself, the positives and negatives, how to make your website perform better, and link building. So these are all areas that we're going to go into in a bit more depth right now. The first element of creating an SEO plan is your keyword research. So how does your target market search online? Does your audience use mobile? Which search engine are they using? What are they trying to find? Are they trying to find your location, your shop, your blog, your content? Each of these could obviously result in different keywords. What keywords and phrases do competitors use? What are the most obvious keywords or keyword phrases for your industry, for your product, for your brand? Will the people searching for you likely use long tail keywords? Are they likely to be searching for example, training providers in Wales, or are they likely to just be put in training? You know, these are observations that you need to make about your audience and how they're likely to search for you. Might your customers use slang or business jargon to find your content? Are there any industry terms? Are there any specific terms that people are going to be looking for? Because these are often a way of narrowing down the competition of these keywords. Finally, are your keywords difficult to spell? Are they commonly misspelled? How could they be misspelled? Is it worth you considering putting in spelling errors, knowing that people are going to search for that in Google? The next thing we need to look at then is search engines. So which search engines does your audience use? Some people must use Bing. They must do. I've never met anyone personally, and if I do know any people who use Bing, they certainly keep quiet about it, but they must use it. So it's worth considering that. It's worth considering Google versus Bing in that instance. How do the different search engines rank your keywords? Is it worth the effort to optimize for both? So Bing have recently simplified the process of converting your search engine optimization from Google just by clicking a button, translate this to Bing. However, the algorithms are going to be slightly different for both engines. So it might be worth spending the extra time. If you know 100% that your market uses Bing, then it might be worth you spending the time to optimize for Bing. That said, the number one search term on Bing consistently and by quite a long stretch is Google. So it's worth keeping in mind how people are using these search engines. The next thing we need to look at is content. So identifying our audience is the first step. What would they be interested in reading? What is my audience going to be looking for? We need to research our topic. We need to create something that adds to the topic. If we're putting out content, if we're putting out a blog, we need to add to the topic. We don't need to just be rehashing things that have been said to us before, rehashing different articles or different videos or different podcasts within our industry. We need to add to the topic. We need to give something new. We need to give a new perspective. This is going to make our content more useful and for our consumers. That being said, we need to give useful information, like, for example, tips on saving money, tips on studying, tips on anything, whatever fits in with your industry, with your product, with your brand. We need to give useful information that people can use. Maybe have a focus on educating or something interesting. Just putting out the hard sell in your content, buy our stuff, look how cool our stuff is. This is not giving any value to the consumer. So they're likely to move on. They're likely to move on to other sites or other companies to find something more interesting when they're looking for content. We need to write in a manner that suits our readers. Good grammar and good punctuation might be more important to a business type audience than a less formal one. Maybe we need to consider things like slang. Are we going to use slang? How would our customers expect us to behave online? This is something that's going to make our content more engaging and increase the quality of the content, increasing web traffic to that content, which will then in turn help boost our search engine optimization. Use of media is another one. Content that includes videos are ranked more highly in search engine results than text-only content. Users on the internet obviously do not expect to just see walls of text. They like to see an image, they like to see a video, they like rich media, and the search engine spiders like to see the same stuff. They will rank your website more highly in terms of search engine optimization if it includes rich media. The website itself also has a profound effect on search engine optimization, so we need to include that in our SEO plan. URLs, shorter URLs are a mess. Long and complex URLs can also be complex to search engine spiders. Short URLs work better for SEO, and short and descriptive URLs, rather than /x79ztuf, a descriptive URL will make the search engine understand the likely content of that page more easily. CSS, cascading style sheets, text files with instructions that browsers can access in order to display text on websites normally written in HTML. They make maintaining your website easier, as rather than having to make multiple changes, just one change in the CSS can update the whole site. It'll just make your site run better and more efficiently, and search engines will like that. The age of the website is something that Google places a lot of importance on. New websites may even have a waiting period before appearing in search results at all, but websites that are older and have regular traffic going to it already is more likely to appear more highly on a search result. Keywords have been mentioned already, but we'll break that down into a bit more depth shortly. And link building is something we're going to look at soon as well. But these are things that we need to consider when creating our SEO plan, looking at the website. So link building refers to how well your website is linked, both internally around your website so that you can click here to go to your homepage, click back to go to your products page. You know, those internal links or deep links allow the search engine spiders to move around your website more efficiently as well. So we're looking at internal linking, but also externally to and from other sites. Being linked from a .gov site is going to be much more beneficial for SEO than being linked by a .com or a .biz site, for instance. So external link building, linking back and forth between other people and between other websites that are ranked highly by Google, is going to help you and your website as well. So let's have a look at keywords then. Keywords and keyword phrases should obviously match up to the search terms your potential customers are searching for on the search engine. Popular keywords will have a lot of competition. So, you know, keywords are obviously going to be different for every business, but many of these will cross over. So a high amount of competition is likely to appear for popular keywords in order to appear on page one. Choosing your keywords and keyword phrases wisely and then implementing them appropriately on your website will lead you to appearing higher in searches. Keywords should be repeated throughout your website, but importantly now, these should be repeated without compromising the quality of content. If there's one thing you get from this podcast and from the workshop, this should be it. Everything that you do for search engine optimization should not compromise the quality of your content. Now, there was a time back in the Old West days of the internet where you would find websites with a white background, and if you highlighted the page, you would see the keywords in white text on the white background so that they're just appearing in, so that Google thinks, ooh, there's a lot of mentions of this keyword in this website, maybe it should appear highly in the search result. Google's cleverer than that now. Your best bet with SEO is to play Google's game, is not to try and scam it. So choosing your keywords is an incredibly important thing, but implementing them without compromising the quality of the content of your website is possibly the most important thing that I would like to give to you through this podcast. So when choosing your keywords, we need to take a couple of things into account. First of all, how relevant are the keywords to your business? So again, Google will realize if you're trying to shoehorn them in to increase traffic. Plus, traffic means nothing if it's the wrong audience anyway. We need to make sure that the keywords are relevant to the business and to our goals. What are the most popular terms? Can you compete with these terms? You know, are the big boys using these terms? Or are they something that you're in just enough of a niche market that it's going to work for you? Are long tail keywords or phrases, keyword phrases, better suited? Can you repeat your keywords throughout the website without compromising the quality of content? It's all well and good understanding that this keyword is going to be the most appropriate for you. But if you can't figure out how to embed it without compromising your content, then it's a waste of your time. again, we need to consider common spelling mistakes, slang, jargon, things like that. And we need to do our research. We need to look at the keywords that our competitors are using. There's a number of different tools that we can use to conduct research on our keywords. Tools like SEMrush, Google AdWords, Moz. These are three good examples of things that we can use for researching our keywords. I recommend that you do some research on these, have a little play around with them. SEMrush and Moz are freemium tools, but you can use a free version of them to get an understanding of the kind of information that they're going to give you. Google AdWords, again, you just need a website, really. It's much like analytics. It can give you a lot of good information and help you understand in terms of paying for keywords, paying for adverts. Google AdWords can give you a lot of information on there. That said, there's a bunch of different ways that we can get inspiration for our keywords. So things like looking at Twitter hashtags that are being used. Google Trends is a great one, which you should have looked at in the workshop there. Using these tools to look at statistics on keywords and receive suggestions on synonyms and stuff like that is a very useful way of conducting keyword research. Another few tools that you can use to spy on your competition, if you like, to understand the keywords that your competition are using, their search ranking. You can even see what adverts your competition has running. There's a lot to these sites, and these are sites including things like keywordspy.com, semcomplete.com, serpanalytics.com. SERP Analytics is something that you should have looked at in the workshop as well. But my advice is go away and look at these different tools and websites and choose the one that you find the most user-friendly. There's a lot of different ones for different needs, but all of these things should have enough usability that you can play around with them and see how they work. Maybe it's not affordable for you and your organization to actually pay to use these things, but you can at least get a good understanding of how they work, and you can probably get some insight on keywords without having to pay for them. It's just if you're spending a lot of time and money and resources on search engine optimization, then at that point it's going to be worth you having a look at these tools and seeing whether it's going to be cost effective for your organization to invest in them. So, as we alluded to earlier, placing keywords around your website in the relevant places for Google to understand that these are keywords is basically the process of search engine optimization. As search engines normally give more attention to the first 200 words on a page, it's good practice to ensure that these keywords and key phrases are near the top of the page and then proportionately throughout the rest of the page. Again, this should not compromise the quality of the content. So some places where we should be placing our keywords, things like the title of the website, any headings and subheadings, the naming of any images on your website. Recommendations from your current customers is something that Google has been shown that Google takes a lot of stock in. Recommendations from customers mean they're external, so it means that in Google's mind these are organic keywords. So that's something that search engines do look for. Links to and from your website, again, we'll look at link building shortly, but links going to and from your website that include keywords are also very important. In the workshop, you will have watched a video that explained some of the key concepts of SEO to you, and they gave the example in that of if a bunch of different websites all over the internet have the word books, and that word is hyperlinked then and leads to Amazon.com, then Google will understand that to mean Amazon.com is a good place for people who are searching for books. So obviously people that put a relevant keyword to your business and they hyperlink that and send it to your business, Google understands that to mean that your place is a good place for that keyword, and you'll appear highly in search engine results as a result of that. We can also look at the body text. As we've mentioned, the first 200 words there is something that Google looks for. Also tags, meta tags on images, things like that, tags around the website. And even the URL itself, if your keyword appears in your URL, then Google understands this is probably a good place for people who are searching for that keyword. So once we've researched, we've chosen our keywords, we've placed our keywords around, we then need to look at testing, tracking, and monitoring. So testing the keywords in the first instance is good practice. Using a paid search campaign is arguably the most effective way of doing this, as it allows you to get tangible results on your test. Due to changes in social media and search engine algorithms, it's important to monitor your keywords on at least a monthly basis. This is good practice because things change so quickly. So SEO is not something that you do once and then leave it. SEO is something that you do and you monitor and you improve continuously. You can also check how your keywords are doing at no extra cost by getting the web server's log files from the hosting provider and analyzing the data yourself. Or, to simplify the process, Google Analytics is an incredibly powerful piece of software that is provided by Google for free, and that will give you some really strong analytical information on your website and traffic. Google is very user-friendly by its very definition. Analytics helps you get you started in three simple steps and then immediately begins generating valuable data for you about your website, its traffic, your audience, and how they are interacting with your website. The three steps are sign up, make an account for Google Analytics. They just take some basic information about the site that you'd like to monitor. It'll then give you a tracking code to paste onto your pages so that Google knows when your site is visited. So you just get that tracking code and add it to the relevant areas of your website. Google will give you some guidance on that as well. Step three is begin learning about your audience. In, I think it's 4 or 5 hours, Google starts generating that data, and immediately you can see that for yourself. So that is a incredibly handy tool. It's free and probably one of the most powerful tools. And obviously it's provided by Google so that you know that you're getting the right information for your SEO, really. Now, let's take a look at link building. Link building is a very important part of search engine optimization, but generally lesser known than keywords, pay-per-click, pay-per-impression, all of that sort of stuff. Simply put, a link refers to any text or image on a web page that you can click on. When you click on the link, it redirects you to another page or file, either on the same website or on a different website. This is referred to as the landing page. Search engines rank websites higher when they have active links, as they interpret that as having informational value, particularly links that lead to your website as the landing page. So, in other words, a website with lots of active links to and from their page will benefit your SEO, as search engines deem that website to be active and useful to their users. So with that in mind then, we need to create a link building plan. Just having a link building plan in the first place and spending time considering what you want to achieve and how puts you in good stead for SEO. You should consider deep linking or internal linking, how links will work to let the user navigate around your own website with ease. You'll also need to look at external linking. What external pages are you going to link to? You can consider partners, supporters, charities, even influencers. The potential list here is absolutely huge and limited only by you and what you can think up. But again, make sure that it is useful information and that it does not compromise the quality of your website. You also need to consider returning the favor. How are you going to convince other sites to link back to you? What can you offer? What content are you putting out that is going to be valuable to other audiences? Why would somebody want to visit your website? Can you make potential linkers aware of those reasons? So we looked at deep links. Deep links refer to a link to a page within your overall website. So with clever use of deep links around your website, users will be able to navigate your site more easily and fluently. That alone should reduce bounce rates. That should stop people from bouncing in and bouncing straight out. By deep linking efficiently, you're also sending users to more valuable content that is on your homepage. Inevitably, people are very rarely looking for your homepage. They're looking for specific information somewhere within your page. So deep linking appropriately will help that be achieved. Deep linking also helps search engines easily navigate your website when trawling for keywords. So this means that your internal pages are more likely to be indexed by search engines, which increases visibility overall. External links, on the other hand, so links that you're linking from your website, some examples of this could be information about where your company's located, Google Maps indicating exactly where you are, professional associations of the company or employees, so for example, the British Psychological Society, or you know, any other bodies that are associated with your organization or your website or your brand. Papers that anyone in the company has written that have been published and are relevant to the industry or company products. That's another good one because it shows you as a professional body. Blogs that you follow, and obviously blogs that are in line with company policy. But, you know, other useful blogs, useful information for your users so that you can send them somewhere else more valuable. This is good practice, and it's only polite. Some other things, membership organisations, clubs, you know, the local football club, even things like that, if you're a local business. Recommendations on articles that are in line with your company sector or industry. Reviews on key points, news or scientific discoveries. These are all things that you could potentially link out to that are outside of just your partners or, you know, other websites for your industry, things that you sort of have to link to. Obviously, another big one here is social media, social icons, having your Facebook icon, your Twitter icon, all of that, having that available clearly and easily on your website. So how do we get people to return the favor? How do we get linked by external websites? There's a bunch of things here. So you can make your website easy to link to by including a link to our website button with just a short sentence about the company and its product. You can have a button on your website that people can click and just download some code or, you know, copy some code that they can paste into their website, which will link to you. Include a copy of your logo, which other site owners or webmasters can download really easily. That's something that will encourage people to link back to you because it means that they can put some content up rather than just a text hyperlink. Adding interesting new content on your blog or your website or anything else. Interesting new content helps keep your page fresh and it keeps your page valuable to other people and will encourage them to link maybe just to that blog, maybe just to that piece of content, but it'll encourage people to link back to your website, which is going to help. Educational or informative sections, you know, how-to information relevant to your industry sector should be included on your website because, again, this is useful content that isn't specific to you, your brand, your product. You could submit articles that your company has written to industry news sites. So if you or someone in your organization has written an article, you can submit that to blogs or other news sites and encourage them to link back to you then. For more information, visit our website. This is a very effective way, especially if you can appear on blogs that are relevant to your search, to your searchers. Another thing we can do in order to make it easy for users to link to your website is including share this or retweet buttons. This will essentially just copy the URL and paste it into the format that they want it to, whether that's a post on Twitter or a post on Facebook or whatever it is. But it's an easy way for people to share your content and for people to link back to you. Another thing you can do is just straight up ask relevant companies to link to your website. Just, you know, offer to swap links with other websites. These are things that you can do just by talking to people and saying maybe your users would find our content interesting and vice versa. Promoting and networking. Word of mouth can still work, so let people know that your website's online and links will begin to happen almost organically. So to round up on SEO, we had a little table there with things that were good for search engine optimization and bad for search engine optimization. So I'm going to run through these a little bit. Things that are good for SEO. Links from .edu and .gov sites help your search engine optimization as they have a better reputation, according to Google, than .com or .biz websites. Links to reputable directories, things like the Yahoo directory. These are websites that Google believes in. Google has got some faith in these websites that they are linking to good content. Putting good content up on your website, unique content, the frequency of content, the change of content, it shows Google that your website is active and it's working and it's being used. It's going to be useful to the people who are searching for those particular keywords. Speaking of keywords, selecting the correct keywords for your page and the best keywords for your page is absolutely critical for search engine optimization. It is the name of the game. make sure that your keywords are embedded in the relevant places around your website, your headings, your URLs, your anchor text, the body, the meta tags, things like that. Keep an eye on your keyword density, repetition of the keywords on the page, but in a relevant manner. You should take care doing this because overuse of keywords can have a negative impact. It's referred to as keyword stuffing. Just jamming in all these keywords because you think that that's going to help your SEO. Again, Google's cleverer than that. Play its game. So let's have a look at things that are bad for SEO. First things first, paid links. Google forbids the buying and selling of links. Google is very, very averse to this, and well, obviously it pollutes the results. It pollutes the results of their searches. It means that you are transferring money around Google's product without Google getting a cut of it. So this is something that they forbid and that they actively discourage. If they find that links are being paid for, then it can have a severe result on your search engine optimization. Google doesn't like it when you cheat. Poor content, that can have another negative effect on your SEO. Thin or superficial content where nothing meaningful is written and the page is just spread out with words. Again, the bottom line here is don't try and trick Google. Google is cleverer than you and it knows when you're trying to trick it. On the opposite side of the spectrum, keyword stuffing. As we just mentioned, this is where the user puts the same words repeated on a single page on their website, believing that it would trick the search engine into ranking the website high. The same thing with meta tags. Meta tag stuffing is where keywords are repeated in the meta tags. Hidden text, as we talked about earlier, an example of this is when you hide your multiple keywords on your page, perhaps setting the text as the same color as the background. So obviously the reader can't see the words, but the website creator hopes that this will aid optimization. Unfortunately, this is all in code and the search engine is able to see all of this and a website can be penalized for this. Cloaking is another term. Cloaking is a technique in which a different page is sent to the search engine spider than the one is presented to the user's browser. So the spider thinks that it's getting good information, or there's a lot of keywords in this one, but you've actually sent it to another website. Again, Google is very clever. It knows when you're trying to trick it. Cloaking is something that can have a severe effect on your search engine optimization. Finally, URL redirection. This is a technique for making a web page available under more than one URL address. This is another big no-no for Google if you're trying to trick it. If you've just got multiple addresses that lead to your same web page because they're different addresses that users do use, then that's something that Google understands. But if you're just trying to do it for SEO purposes, Google can and will penalize you for that. So that's everything on search engine optimization. We'll move on now into a new topic. We're going to look at social media optimization. So if search engine optimization is the process of driving traffic to a website, social media optimization is the process of keeping them there for longer, consuming your content. It's the process of generating publicity for your website, increasing the awareness of it, and making it easily shareable across the social web. So social media often drives as large an audience, or sometimes even larger audiences than search engines do. Websites such as Etsy, for instance, see a lot more traffic through social media shares than through search engines. So it's statistically likely that if your website or content resonates with someone, it's likely that their friends are also going to enjoy it. So through sharing it in this way through social media, that means that your website is reaching a highly targeted audience. Frequently shared URLs are viewed in a positive way by search engines, so this will also increase SEO. So how do we optimize social media? There's a number of different ways. The bottom line is we need to look at it in a very similar way to search engine optimization. So some of the techniques that we can use then are things like RSS feeds. These are written in XML and enable you to organize your site content into an order of your choosing. So it can be useful for listing important events or organizing content into orders, most recently updated, most viewed, that sort of thing. So it makes the information on your website easier to find and share. So that will help in turn people share that on social media. Widgets is another one. Widgets you'll see on various websites. They're applications that can embed your social media feeds or photo viewer or poll, fundraising link, whatever you like, into a website, blog, or social media profile. Encourage and sharing. Ask your audience groups to share your content. Send it to influencers and ask them to share it if they like it. Request partners to share. Even your customer audience can be persuaded as long as you're not being too pushy. Facebook penalizes you for phishing for shares. So, you know, your one share equals one prayer. What seems to be common practice on Facebook is, you know, like and share to enter this competition. This is something that is against Facebook's terms and conditions, and they can penalize you for that. So it's a tightrope to walk, because they can be very successful, but they can have a negative impact on your social media presence. So it's something to consider if you are going down that route. Share buttons on content, as we mentioned earlier, can make the process easier for the audience to share your content. So having those share buttons is something that means that people can just click once and they can share. Having to copy and paste the link into their particular social media profile can often be something that is too much work for people. Just having a share button will expedite the process and make it more likely for them to just click and share. Create an engaging content. Now, this for me is a no-brainer. Create some good, engaging content. Use your keywords. Encourage your social media audience to share it if they like it. If not, make your next post more engaging. Creating engaging content is the name of the game for pretty much all digital marketing. And that goes with search engine optimization, social media optimization, and everything else that we'll talk about in the context of this course. My final point here is using keywords in profiles. Social media pages and profiles appear in search results in the same way as any other website. So search engines use keywords to find relevant content. Your social media profile should use keywords in the same way as any other content. You should make sure that you are embedding the relevant keywords into the relevant areas of your social media profiles in order to ensure that you're appearing as highly as possible in search engine results. So once we're doing all these things, we're optimizing our social media, same as search engine optimization, we need to track it. We need to monitor it. So there's a couple of tools that we can use for monitoring and listening to conversations on social media. Google Alerts. This is a tool that sends you regular emails when your keywords appear in news, social media, or blogs, etc. So it's a very, very simple process that you go to Google Alerts, you type in the keywords that you want, you type in your email address, and every time they pop up, Google sends you an email. So it means that you're getting to-the-minute information from social media. TweetDeck. So TweetDeck is a tool, it's a social networking management tool, really, but it allows users to follow the thread of a particular conversation on a specific topic. TweetDeck is something that we're going to look at and use in the workshop for Unit 303, but it's a really good tool, and it's now owned by Twitter as well, so it's created to work alongside Twitter now. The other one was Sprout Social. Now, this is a paid tool, so that you need to pay to use it, but it's incredibly powerful. It tracks keywords, hashtags, mentions, locations, and much, much more. But it does come at a cost, so it's something, again, that you need to look at and weigh up the pros and cons of whether that's going to be something that's useful for your organization. One thing we need to consider with social media optimization throughout, really, is search engine optimization. We need to be mindful of the best practices of SEO. So things like, again, avoiding keyword stuffing, using keywords in profile and posts organically, just as you would with SEO. We need to look for ways to give our audience more social access. So if they need to log into your website, why not allow them to log in or comment with Facebook or Twitter? Something that potentially they're already logged into, it expedites the process for them and it links your website with their social media page. Rewarding social actions, so engaging positively with users that engage with you first. Thanks for the retweet, thanks for following, welcome to the party, those sorts of things. Show your users that you reward these social actions and they will be more inclined to interact with you. And finally, another best practice of SEO, keep the end user in mind. So how might the end user engage with your website through social channels? Consider how they would like to. Think about how people are using your website, how people are using social media, and how you can link the two. Then all you need to do is give them the tools that they need to do that. So moving on from there, we're going to look at mobile optimization. Mobile optimization in 2019 is something that we know that this is something that we need to do. This, it comes as no shock anymore. Mobile optimization is huge. And to hammer that home, I've got another bunch of lovely statistics here for you. So there are over 50 million smartphone users in the UK. 4 out of 5 internet users go online with a mobile device. Near me searches increased 200% between 2017 and 2018. That statistic alone shows you the importance of mobile optimization, because that is a term that people are likely to be searching on their mobile phone. They're likely to be searching coffee shop near me, petrol station near me, and they increased by 200% in the 12 months between 2017 and 2018. Google considers loading times and mobile optimization now in search engine rankings. They announced in 2016 that they were planning their mobile first index, where all sites will be ranked on the mobile version as opposed to the desktop version. So this is now in place, and what that means for us is that mobile optimization is one of the most important things that we need to do for SEO itself. So if you weren't convinced already, hopefully by this point you can understand the importance of mobile optimization. In the workshop, you will have looked at a website called website.grader.com. This allows you to enter your website into their search term, and they will run through your website and give you a full report for free on how your website currently ranks in terms of SEO, in terms of mobile optimization, in terms of security, and a number of different things. And it'll give you that full report detailing how you can make improvements on there. This is a really interesting tool and something that I absolutely recommend that you do when you're looking at SEO and when you're looking at mobile optimization. It takes 2 minutes and it gives you a really user-friendly report. So maybe pause this and take 5 minutes, go and have a look at Website Grader. Okay, I assume you're back now. So how to improve? How can we improve our mobile optimization? There's a number of different things here. So responsive design. So responsive design ensures that your page functions and looks good regardless of screen size or device. It's responsive to the device that you're working from. Streamline. So less pages, quicker loading, simpler layout. Streamline your website. Make sure that it's easy to move around on a small screen and it's easy to get the content that you want to get. Speaking of content, content should be short and sweet. You've got less room for text on small screens, so only include what you need to. Include your key points rather than waffling on. But give them the full content option. Click to read more, things like that. If people want to find the full content, you should absolutely let them do that. Flash is a big no-no. Make sure that your website is not too flashy. This will allow for less distractions, less pop-ups. Java and Flash are not always supported on a smartphone and they can take a long time to load, so avoid using them. Make sure that you can easily navigate around your website on a mobile device. Have back buttons, home buttons, things like that. Consider drop-down menus instead of text fillable. So when you've got your, you know, rather at the top of your desktop website, you've got, you know, your bar where it says home, contact us, all of those different links. Have that on a drop-down menu. As with if you're filling any forms, consider drop-down menus there instead of text fillable. So minimize the opportunity for user error on irritatingly small smartphone keyboards. Speaking of small text, enlarge your text, enlarge your buttons. Smaller screens and fat fingers require large buttons. So text size, having an enlarged text size stops the user from having to zoom in and out, which for me is one of the most annoying things on non-optimized websites. Make purchasing quick and easy. If you've got a shop on your website, make it easy to get there. Don't make them jump through hoops in order to find it, in order to get it. Have a clear button. This is where you need to click to go to our shop. And finally, branding. Keep to the colour scheme, keep to your branding traditions. Ensure that you've got customer recognition on all devices, on all tools and all channels. When we're looking at mobile optimization, we can look at mobile search engine optimization as well. Now, again, these two do go hand in hand now, especially now that Google is using the mobile version of a website when it's doing its SEO, when it's using its algorithm to decide how where you're going to appear on search engine results. It's going to look at your mobile site over your desktop site. That said, there are subtle differences between SEO and mobile SEO that are important to keep in mind. So users on mobiles have different needs. business mobile users may be more specific, so young mobile users may be more broad. Again, as we mentioned earlier, nearby or near me searches are more likely to be searched on a mobile and are more likely to appear. Search rankings also appear slightly differently. So seventh place on Google on a desktop might show on page one, but it could be page two or even page three on a mobile device. So that's something that you need to keep in mind as well. Where is your ranking appearing on a mobile, and where is it appearing on a desktop? Something to consider here is that mobile users never switch off their device. Mobile phones tend to never be switched off. So what that means for you is that you have, in theory, got 24-hour access to your potential customers. Keywords might rank differently for mobile users than desktop users as well. So that's, again, another something to keep in mind. If you're doing nearby, if you're doing near me, these things are likely to be searched more on a mobile and they're likely to appear more highly. So keep in mind your keywords and maybe consider the difference between keywords on a desktop and keywords on a mobile device. Keywords for a mobile device differ slightly from a desktop as a rule. Some differences include things that, so users searching on a mobile are likely to be more specific in what they're looking for. So they're more likely to use long tail keywords to get the information or the website they require. This is due to the availability of the mobile device, in my opinion. The user can search as soon as it comes into their head. So they don't have to open up their laptop, log in, enter their password, open up the browser. They just pick up their phone and say, okay, Google, or whatever it is that they do. Users tend to use fewer keywords when searching on a mobile as a rule. Again, possibly due to the awkwardness of the touchscreen QWERTY keyboard. So, you know, understanding your long tail keywords is one thing, but understanding your short keywords, your short punchy keywords, that's something to consider when you're considering mobile device SEO. In turn, as a result of users using fewer keywords, this makes keywords that are popular in predictive text more valuable. People are using predictive text on their QWERTY keyboards, and so if these keywords pop up in predictive text, then they're more likely to be searched. Finally, mobile users tend to be influenced by things that they've seen on other social media tools and channels. So this is a reason why Google treats social media shares as votes, almost, for SEO. It is influenced by social media. So with that in mind, that's just about everything that we needed to get through. So hopefully this will have given you a decent recap on what happened in the workshop session. And hopefully you'll feel a bit more prepared now to go into the assignment and to absolutely smash it. Best of luck with everything. Hope all goes well. Diolch yn fawr a pob lwc.